Half a day later, Mantilla's barge approached Evansville and Henderson across the river. No bridge spanned the river anymore, but there were plenty of small craft on both sides. They scattered as the tug approached.
Your boys closed the river, Major? Do I have to worry about artillery gunning for me?
No, not a lot of traffic up and down the Ohio except food. We don't want to starve anyone, but I'd better go first in your launch and send some people down to the landing just in case. We need all our motor resources to unload the cargo.
Valentine was met by a pair of Wolf scouts who took him up to an artillery spotter with a field phone. They'd made some progress with the communications grid in his absence. Perhaps his old shit detail had done the work. They didn't fight like bears, but they had an interesting skill set. He called operations and reported the arrival of supplies from Southern Command. The hatchet men weren't worth calling reinforcements, so he called them specialists. With that done, he returned to Mantilla's tug.
We have some odds and ends needing transport back, Mantilla. Sick and lamed men. And not to mention a few willing to trade a dishonorable discharge for a way out.
Some might have to ride in the shell if there are too many. I'll need food for them, if there are many.
That can be arranged.
Then I'll be happy to offer transport back. In Paducah, they will be surprised to see me again so soon.
Captain Mantilla, once more, I'm in your debt.
It's my pleasure to aid a Saint Valentine.
It's just Valentine. As you can probably tell, I'm about as Italian as I am Afghan. One more favor to ask. Do you know anyone in the river who can get a message up to St. Louis? There's a big church there that tends to the human population and the Grog captives. Slaves, I guess you call them. I have a friend near there that they help now and then.
I'd be honored to bring a message to Sissy.
Sissy?
Isn't that what you call Narcisse?
Do you know her?
Almost as well as you do, Major Valentine.
Fort Sing. Javelin landed and set up housekeeping within earshot of its victory against the Moondaggers on the banks of the Ohio. In the hills just outside of Henderson, which is now mostly a ghost town, a thickly wooded old state park is now more state than park. Named after the naturalist, the Audubon State Park has changed hands several times in the past year. Briefly used as a headquarters by the Moondaggers, the park was captured by Javelin almost intact, complete with supply depots and communications gear. They were attracted by the clean water, space, cabins, and utility buildings. Just off the highway, near the entrance of the camp, is a set of impressive stone buildings constructed from the plentiful limestone of the area's land. The biggest building is reminiscent of a French chateau, a former museum complete with turret and gardens, broad patios all around, and decorative walls. Though long since stripped of its valuable Audubon prints, it still has pleasant, sun-filled rooms. The Moondaggers, hurrying up from Bowling Green to cut Southern Command off from its escape into Illinois, used its comfortable rooms as a headquarters and relocated the powerful Evansville Quisling who'd occupied the place to one of the two guest homes behind the pool patio. He and his family fled to the Northwest Ordnance as Colonel Bloom's columns approached. Southern Command occupied the building with very little alteration. Of course, the prayer mats and Kurian iconography had to go, unless the former were clean sheepskin or made of precious metals in the case of the latter. Southern Command set up a permanent hospital in the old staff quarters. The cooking area and numerous small rooms fitted for two were ideal for the purpose. The flagpole now bears Southern Command's five-pointed star and the stylized white and red handshake of the Kentucky Alliance. United we stand. Behind the estate house is a parking lot with an oversized limestone gatehouse. That became the unofficial duty office and clearing center as Javelin reorganized itself after their losses on the long retreat across Kentucky and the battles with the Moondaggers. The rich Quisling's driver and mechanics once lived at the gatehouse, and he expanded the place to add overnight accommodations for his friends' drivers and a small canteen for staff. Javelin turned the canteen into a recreation club and also a grill where any soldier could get a quick bite, on duty or off. Valentine noticed the improvements to the camp as soon as he led his party up past the small organized mountains of debarked supplies on Henderson Landing. He checked in Lambert, his hatchet men and medical staff, and Pencil Bolnitz under the watchful eyes of the sentries on the western side of the main highway's pared-down bridges into Evansville. They walked up past artillery positions shielded by hill from direct fire from the river, and communications lines strung to observers ready to order fire down on river traffic, but the Ohio was empty that day. As there was plenty of daylight left, Valentine sent the hatchet men and medicos under gate guide to their appropriate headquarters and borrowed some horses to take Lambert and Pencil Bolnitz on a tour of the battlefield where they'd attacked the Moondaggers. He showed them where the guns were sighted, where the Jones boy had swum the river, the spot where Rand had fallen. Rand had to be remembered somewhere. Valentine described him in detail to Bolnitz. Such promise lost. From the site of Rand's death, Valentine could still see in his mind's eye his old company's heavy weapons grogs, Ford and Chevy, gambling forward with one long arm to add speed to what looked like an unbalanced canter, the other carrying their support weapons the way regular soldiers tote automatic rifles.
We saw them run. After all the tough talk about reprisals, roads lined with crucified, blinded, tongueless prisoners, men who'd be burned alive in cages, they ran. They wept when they surrendered, too. Begged. Wiped our muddy boots with their beards.
What did you do with the prisoners?
Exchanged the foot soldiers for some of ours. Moondaggers lied in some cases and handed over dead men, one or two still warm, in exchange for theirs. According to their philosophy, we're a gutter people who can be lied to if it'll help defeat us. I think they forgot how much we gutter people enjoy kicking the asses of those who label us gutter people. Evansville is keeping a few more in their county lockup for trial. There's a lot of murders and rapes in Kentucky to be answered for. Still, wish we'd bagged a colonel or two. No offense, Colonel Lambert.
Lambert just turned up the corner of her mouth, lost in the hazy sunshine. Her eyes weren't interested, her questions perfunctory and polite. The trees were as brown and bare as a tanned stripper gearing up for a big reveal.
The big bugs got away, as usual.
Valentine noticed that even the husks of the dead Moondagger vehicles had been hauled away, probably melted down for scrap after every ounce of conductive metal had been torn out. Valentine led them over to the old highway running south out of Evansville. Some of the buildings on the double-laned highway showed signs of occupation. A grease pit and a bar had opened up, and some mule wagons were parked in front of an old store. Valentine's ears picked up sounds of construction from within. He wondered what the soldiers of Javelin were using for money. They probably picked up a lot of odds and ends on the retreat across Kentucky, or had looted watches and rings from dead Moondaggers. Southern Command turned a blind eye to some of the more ghoulish habits of her soldiers, especially after a victory. Valentine had seen ashtrays made out of grog hands and rocking chairs with stretched gray fuzzy skin stapled to the supports, date and place of the former wearer's death inked discreetly into a corner of the leather. After the tour of the battlefield, they turned east of the road and into the shadow of tall trees. Just outside the roadblock at the sentry post, with a fresh painted sign identifying everything behind the gate as belonging to Southern Command and notifying all that trespassers may be treated as spies, a curious little vehicle stood. It was a cross between a chariot and a station wagon. The odd sort of tandem motorbike had a stiff bar leading back to a hollowed-out shell of a station wagon, its engine compartment hoodless and filled only with cargo netting. A man in a rather greasy black suit, his white dog collar frayed and holes at the knees and elbows, gave them a wave. He had a pinched look to his face, like someone had grabbed him by the ears and given a good pull.
Free donuts, fresh made today. Come right over. All are welcome.
Valentine glanced at the sentry pacing the gate barrier, who'd pricked up his ears at the sing-song greeting. The corporal shrugged. Valentine's eyes picked up lettering on the side of the souped-up go-kart. NUCM-I.
What do the letters stand for?
I'll tell you as soon as you give your opinion of this batch. Run out of my own flour, so I'm using the local stuff.
The donut he offered on a piece of wax paper glistened with a sheen of fresh honey. Valentine had read somewhere or other that the Persians had given the Greeks honey specially made from plants with pharmacological effects. He hoped that that wasn't the case here.
It's delicious.
I have iced tea to wash it down. Sorry it's not sweetened. The honey's scarce enough. But a dunk or two will sweeten up.
Valentine noticed that the pastry giver addressed himself more to Bolnitz than either Valentine or Lambert, despite the insignia on the uniforms. In the Kurian zone, it rarely hurt to favor the best-looking, best-fed, and best-dressed. Lambert and Bolnitz each accepted a donut as well.
You gonna tell me about those letters?
I'm with the New Universal Church Missions. Independent.
Lambert dropped her donut and Bolnitz eyed his, hand frozen as though the pastry had magically transformed into a scorpion.
Oh, don't worry, friend. I call all brother, whatever their affiliation or uniform. My dunkers are wholesome as fresh milk.
Valentine guessed that the man had been living off of donuts, fresh milk, and maybe a little rainwater and nutritious sun and moonshine for a little too long. His skin had a touch of yellow about it, and the greasy skin on his brow was blotchy. But it just made the eager stare in his eyes more authentic.
I don't want to sound like I'm threatening you, but aren't you afraid of, street justice, so to speak? Some soldiers don't like universal church lectures.
A missionary must be prepared to take a blow. Die even, as an example of sacrifice.
What, you give out pamphlets with the donuts?
No, though I have some literature if you'd like to read it. I have some good stories, written as entertainment, but they contain valuable lessons for today's questioner.
Today's questioner is tomorrow's dinner, if he's not careful.
Every potter's field has its share of broken shards. The just have nothing to fear. All this violence is wrong. Wrong, brother. You Arkansas and Texas boys are a long way from home. Why not go back? The only land in Kentucky you'll ever claim is a grave if you continue down this path.
Thanks for the donut. It was delicious.
They checked in at the sentry post, where Valentine signed in Bolnitz as an unarmed civilian. They issued the reporter a temporary ID. The men looked like they were willing to issue Lambert something else entirely. She was fresh and bright, rather than thin and road-worn, like the women of Javelin who'd made the long round trip. Lambert passed her reassignment orders to the corporal on duty to inspect. He reviewed the paperwork, tapping her months in rank line item.
You have seniority on Colonel Bloom, Colonel Lambert.
I'm not here to turn the camp upside down.
Yes, sir.
As a civilian, you'll have to stay out of headquarters unless escorted, Bolnitz. If you've written stories you need to transmit, just give them to me or the acting exec.
I know security procedure, Colonel. All I need to be happy is a bed with a roof over my head. I hate tents.
We'll see what we can do.
The pleasant walk through the woods to the headquarters building was fueled by a sugar rush from the honey and dough. Valentine's pack felt lighter than it had all day.
Speaking of security, that fellow outside the gate seems like a security risk. He's positioned to count everyone going in and coming out.
The Kurians aren't usually that obvious. I think he's just a nut, convinced that if he does something crazy enough long enough, the Kur will reward him with a brass ring.
No harm treating him like a spy. Best thing in the world is an agent with blown coverage who doesn't know he's unmasked. We can feed him all sorts of information. Low-grade stuff that's true for a while, and then, when we really need it, false data to cover for a real operation.
Voice of experience? Your operations in Kansas and the whole Javelin thing didn't work out that well.
Don't be so sure that you know about the ones that were successful, Pencil.
Lambert's wink put a spring in Valentine's step. Lambert had been sullen and listless during the walk up. He'd been wondering at her state of mind, seeing herself cast into one of Southern Command's ash heaps. The river trip was just that, a trip. Now she must have felt like she'd washed up in a forgotten corner of the war against the Kur. Seeing her energy and good humor return relieved him. Perhaps she'd just been anxious at having nothing to occupy her mind, the way a mother duck without any active ducklings to line up didn't quack or fuss. A trio of soldiers on their way out of camp met them on the road. They straightened up and saluted in recognition of Lambert's eagle.
Excuse me, Major, is there any truth to...
Can't talk in front of our new press representative, Corporal.
Battle Cry's finally gotten around to sending men over the river?
Not yet. Men, this is Mr. Bolnitz from the Bulletin. You can call him Pencil if you'd like.
What's the Bulletin?
It's a small paper. New. Published out of Fayetteville.
Speaking of pen and paper, good news, men. I brought the first mail. I'm bringing it to the all-call at the canteen for the company clerks to distribute.
I don't think we can wait, Major. Would you mind if we followed you there?
Not a problem, Corporal.
The three soldiers turned around and fell in behind Valentine. The first thing Valentine did was to stop at the big gatehouse and hand off the mail. His oversized carrier held nothing now but official correspondence for Colonel Bloom and a few small presents for his own staff. With the mail delivered, Valentine's first duty was to report to his commanding officer. Lambert turned up her collar and lowered the flaps on her hat.
Give Colonel Bloom my compliments, Major. I'll pay a call on her shortly, but I'd like to walk the grounds in Mufti for the afternoon.
Valentine saluted and left her to her solitary tour. He gave orders to see to Bolnitz's quartering and left him with a promise for a dinner where the reporter could meet some of the other officers. The main building hadn't changed much on the outside since he'd last seen it. The comfortable-looking former museum and educational center, later an estate house, was designed to look like a cross between a mountain lodge and a small chateau.
Major Valentine, sir!
At ease, Private.
Once through the doors, though, he noticed new details. There was proper signage everywhere, a new map and roster behind a glass case, a duty desk instead of an officer making do with a bench and an entryway table that had been more suited for hats and gloves, and a proper communications center, probably servicing the new high mast rigged to the decorative gazebo behind the mansion.
What happened to the face, Valentine?
A difference of opinion in a brothel, Colonel Bloom.
Over a girl, I take it?
My favorite there was old enough for false teeth.
Bloom took from him her envelope of orders. The good humor bled away from her face as she read. Colonel Cleveland Bloom took the news with professional grace. Or maybe it was just her instincts for good sportsmanship.
I'm being benched.
Not benched, recalled. Someone has to bring the men home. They followed you most of the way across Kentucky. Southern Command must have figured you were the one to see them home.
You'll stay?
They're giving me permission to orchestrate a guerrilla war.
With what? They're not leaving you much. A communications team and a few hospital personnel to care for the wounded and sick who can't be moved. That quisling rabble of yours will need more than that to be anything more than glorified POWs.
They'd had this argument before. Like most officers in Southern Command, she had a low opinion of the kind of men who the Kurians used to fill out the bottom ranks of their security and military formations. Thugs, sycophants, thieves, and bullies, with a few out-and-out sadists peppering the mix.
The shit detail used to be Quisling rabble. They made the round trip with the rest of us. I don't recall the column ever being ambushed with them acting as scouts, at least until we bivouacked in the Alleghenies outside Utrecht.
I'll leave you what I can, in terms of gear.
Can I have a favor? I'd like to ask for volunteers to stay. I need gunners, technical staff, engineers, and armorers especially.
Bloom, when faced with difficulty, usually got a look on her face that reminded him of a journalist's description of the old U.S. Army General Grant, that he wears an expression as if he's determined to drive his head through a brick wall and was about to do it.
Don't know how Southern Command will react to that. You're talking about prime skill sets.
They'll list him as insurgency assist. They'll still draw in country pay. One day counts as two towards pension.
By volunteers, you mean...
Real volunteers, sir. No Shanghais or arm-twisting.
Then good luck to you.
That be all, sir?
They leave it to my discretion over exactly when I turn over command of this post to Colonel Lambert, though I'll maintain operational command of the brigade, even while it's based here, until it returns across the Mississippi. Seems to me there's just enough wiggle room for me to keep the troops here until you're convinced the base is functioning properly, from hot water to cooking gas to master comlinks.
I'll have a list tomorrow, sir.
Anything else for me, Valentine?
I told the truth about what happened, sir. I argued that we won an important victory, even if it wasn't the victory they expected. Southern Command's looking for a scapegoat. I expect they'll make Colonel Lambert and General Lehman take most of the blame. Lehman's being sent to a quiet desk, and Lambert's out here. Be ready to answer for us, and for yourself.
Thanks for the warning.
Anything else, sir?
Is Colonel Lambert in the headquarters?
She's walking around, incognito, I suppose you could call it. She wanted to get a feel for the men in the place unofficially before she takes an official role.
I understand. If you come across her, please ask her if she'd like to have dinner with me tonight.
Yes, sir. I'll pass the word.
I hope she doesn't mind eating late.
As Valentine walked toward his new formation's billet, he saw his hatchet men inspecting the vehicles in the motor pool. Of the long column of vehicles that had started out with Javelin, only one battered old army truck had survived the entire journey out of the large vehicles. The rest had been cannibalized to keep others going or lost to wear, moondagger rockets, artillery and mines, or accidents. A few civilian pickups, Hummers, and motorcycles remained, looking like candidates for a demolition derby thanks to the knocks and cracks.
Master Sergeant Braggy?
It's pronounced Brage, Major.
Sorry, Sergeant, I couldn't resist. Why the interest in the motor pool?
Orders, sir. We're to determine what's worth taking and what'll be left behind. My staff and I have final word. Our decisions are final and unalterable.
I've seen my share of alterations to unalterable. May I see the orders, please? My old friend, General Martinez. You're on his staff?
I have that honor, sir.
Martinez has been honoring me for years now. Hardly feel it anymore.
I'm sure you mean General Martinez, sir. Of course, whether I make the GHQ staff depends on my success with this assignment. I intend to leave no stone unturned.
I wouldn't advise you to turn over too many stones in Martinez's staff garden. Not a pretty sight.
I have to get back to work, Major. I'd advise you not to hinder me.
Or what, Sergeant Bragg?
Brage, sir. Anyone caught red-handed in the act of taking or keeping Southern Command property from its proper allocation, right down to sidearms, may be dealt with summarily. That only applies in combat areas, of course.
Of course. If you want to see a combat area, Sergeant Bragg, I suggest you try to take a weapon from one of my men.
Javelin stood on parade, a great U of men. It reminded Valentine of his farewell to the Razorbacks in Texarkana, when they retired the tattered old flag that had waved over Big Rock Hill and been bomb-blasted at Love Field in Dallas. As Valentine read out the list of commendations and promotions, each man stepped forward to receive their medals and new patches and collar tabs from Bloom. A delegation of civilians and officers of the New City Militia from Evansville sat in chairs, watching. Valentine hoped they were impressed. All they'd seen of Southern Command's forces up to now had been files of tired, dirty, unshaven men lining up to receive donations of food, toiletries, and bedding from Evansville's factories, workshops, and small farmers. Valentine had juggled with the schedule a little to get as many excused from duties as possible, but it was worth it. He stepped forward to the microphone when Bloom was done.
Colonel, with your permission, I'd like to add one more name, if you'll indulge me, sir.
With the greatest of pleasure.
Javelin Brigade. I have one more promotion. At this time, I'd like to recognize one of my oldest friends in the cause. Top Sergeant Patel. Would you step forward, please?
Valentine noticed Patel hesitate for a moment before handing his cane to his corporal. He marched out into the center of the U of formed ranks. Valentine couldn't tell if he was wincing or not. He marched without any sign of weakness in his old, worn-down knees.
This man has been looking out for me since I was a shave-tailed lieutenant with his shoes tied like a civilian's. He helped me select and train my company. The shit detail. Top Sergeant Patel performed above and beyond. Crossing Kentucky and back on a pair of legs that are hardly fit for a trip to the latrine. I recommended and Southern Command granted a commission for Neelay Patel, elevating him to the rank of captain with its attendant honors and benefits. He's been breveted over lieutenant so that our Captain Patel will never have to salute a sniveling little lieutenant with his laces half undone ever again.
You could have given me fair warning, sir. Would have paid for a shave and a haircut across the highway.
Surprise. So be sure to save a seat for him on the barge home. He'll ride home in a comfortable deck chair. This befits a captain.
Excuse me, sir. I'm not leaving before you and the company.
We'll argue about it later, Captain. These are some old insignia of mine. No branch on the reverse. They don't do that for cats, or they put in a false one. Please step forward.
Wear them in good health, Neely.
Thank you, sir. It's good to feel useful again, even if it comes with a little pain.
Company! Salute the captain!
The fall weather turned colder and rainier. Through it all, Southern Command's forces improved Fort Singh, rigging, lighting, and plumbing and communications throughout the fort. A double perimeter was laid out, though they didn't have the mines, lights, or listening posts to cover the entire length. Valentine saw bullnets mostly around headquarters. He had a knack for finding something interesting going on and observing in the company of whoever was doing it, asking questions but keeping out of the way. The men felt flattered to be interviewed, as did some of the women. Valentine saw one long-service veteran giggling like a coquettish schoolgirl as they chatted. A couple of others looked at him with naked hunger, the way she-wolves might eye a dead buck strung up for dressing. In the meantime, Valentine reintroduced himself to B, one of the three grogs in camp. He'd rescued her and two others from the circus of DC Marvels before Javelin entered Kentucky, and he'd also known her years ago when she'd traveled as a bodyguard to a bounty hunter and trader named Hoffman Price. Big as a bull, she had arms long enough to go around him twice when she sniffed and touched and remembered who he was. She'd apparently forgotten his existence, but was equally delighted to reacquaint herself with him, and she soon fell into her old habit of trailing along somewhere in his wake with a shotgun and an assault rifle, both cut down to pistol grips, in holsters on her wide thighs, with plates of bulletproof vest serving as loincloth, vest, and mantle. His ex-quizzlings were losing their baby fat, or their paunches, under Patel's double-time training. During the day, the mixture of tenting and barrack that housed his ex-quizzlings, the men were building their own accommodations as part of the shakedown training, lay empty in the field behind the bungalow. Each morning, Valentine would visit the headquarters bungalow for his quizzling battalion. He'd chosen the bungalow not for its size or plumbing or available furniture. He liked it because it had a huge social room, a sort of living room, dining room, kitchen combined. He lined the walls of the big room with couches and stuffed comfortable chairs. Judging from the remaining books, the house had belonged to a gardener or a gamekeeper who'd worked for the estate's owner. Valentine liked to hold meetings comfortably, with everyone seated and relaxed, usually in the evening. This particular morning, he found it in the hands of Ediac, once a lieutenant, but now a captain, thanks to Rand's death. When he'd returned to Fort Sing, she'd been across the river, attempting to wrangle more supplies out of the Evansville leadership. She was a delicate-looking young woman, doe-eyed and usually buzzing with energy, who'd defected from the Kurian Order. The defection had been harder for her than most. She'd been involved in communications and intelligence, so she'd lived on an access-restricted section of her former base. She'd played a Mata Hari trick and arranged to date a general, slipping away from a resort hotel as her aged paramour slept. She was fond of saying that she defected for two bottles of wine and beef Wellington. Valentine liked his former company clerk, who'd first come to his notice when she came up with the gray denim utility worker uniforms that allowed his company to roam Tennessee and Kentucky without attracting notice. Some of his command he respected, some he dealt with as best as he could, but he liked her as a person and found her company rewarding beyond the necessities. She was a little weak on assertiveness. She'd risen from private to corporal to sergeant to lieutenant and now captain, thanks to assorted emergencies in the trek across Kentucky, and handled the detail work of each station with ease. But she seemed in a permanent state of finding her feet, thanks to the constant promotions. She needed decent NCOs under her, or the men would get away with murder. But she was bright, and, well, creative was the word, he supposed. She sensed what he wanted with very few words of explanation from him.
How's the organization going?
After cutting out the unfit and the idiots, we're down to a hair over 350. The brigade's artillery stole some of the best and brightest, by the way. The calls are in the labor pool. Right now they're working on getting a better ferry in place between Henderson and Evansville. As you directed, I broke up our old company and made them NCOs over the new formations, 5 men to a platoon. So if you add them in, you have the makings of a decent battalion.
Now tell me what's happened in the interwhiles.
Well, for a start, we're broke. Evansville is a rat pile and everyone's hoarding food, fuel, everything from sewing thread to razor blades. Bloom asked, in her darling, vigorous way, for the men to sacrifice valuables, or they'd have to do a thorough search of the camp to gather non-basic order inventory that might be traded or sold. Of course, the implied threat was that if they didn't contribute some gold and whatnot that they'd picked up on the marches, she'd search thoroughly for all of it. We had a few of our recruits go over to Evansville in search of a good time, Vole and a couple of his cronies. They never came back. I don't know if they deserted or if the Evansville people quietly strung them up in some basement. I think the latter is more likely.
Any good news?
Not much. Supplies are running short, food and dispensables anyway. The leg shavers among the women are sharing one razor blade between us.
Opposition?
The Moondaggers are long gone. Kentucky doesn't have a reaper east of Lexington, from what the wolves tell us. Memphis sent up a couple of armored trains from the city, evacuated what's left of the Moondaggers and prominent Quislings in eastern Kentucky. The rest are holed up in the Bluegrass region with what's left of the Coonskins. But anything that rides layworms is settling in for winter quarters, with the nights getting colder and their worms egging and piling up.
Okay.
Can I ask, sir, what's going to happen with us?
You're going home.
We'll see about that.
Just between you and me, Southern Command has written off Kentucky. They're sending some NCOs and transport to decide what's worth salvaging and what isn't.
Lovely. There go our guns, sir.
Yeah, we'll see about that. By the way, Ediac, where'd you pick up the strange gesture?
That?
You grew up in Alabama, right?
Yes, sir. Grew up poor as dirt in a little patch of kudzu called Hopper, where a girl was expected to be married at 15 and nursing her way through Sweet 16.
So you picked that up after you got out?
Yes, sir. Why so interested?
How did you get out?
Church testing. They had this extraordinary idea of putting me on the public broadcast. A sagging old archon with my picture said I had the perfected look. If by perfected they meant half-starved and iron deficient, I'm guessing they were right. I went to school for 2 years learning about lapel microphones and makeup and phonetic pronunciation. A dusty duckling among graceful swans. Learning to dress and talk and give the appearance of being cultured, even if I was to the outhouse born. Then they decided I didn't look right next to the other news broadcasters because I was too small. I tried out for Noonside Passions, rehearsed with a few of the principals, but didn't get a continuing role. I did 6 episodes before they had me die in childbirth, giving my poor daughter to sweet little Billy, who'd only just learned to shave himself. They told me she'd grow up in no time and fall in love with him. They do get a little ripe on that show, don't they? But I'm getting away from the story of my brush with fame. I left the show and let myself be recruited into military communications.
Is that where you saw the gesture? On the show?
I believe it was from a friend. A very good friend I made on Noonside Passions. One of the writers. A Frenchman. He'd gone to Ecole something or other and was in New York picking up some tips for the French version of the show.
Relief washed down Valentine's spine like cool water. Ediac didn't seem like the Kurian agent type. But then, Kurian agents that penetrated Southern Command spent years working at not being the Kurian agent type. She had seemed discomforted about the mention of the show, though, or the gesture. At their first evening meeting, after Patel's promotion that had leaped him all the way over lieutenant and a single overdue bound, they held an informal party. Congratulations flowed along with some bottles of bourbon of mysterious provenance. Alessa Duvalier appeared in the middle of the chatter and pours. She didn't look agitated, just tired, and with that pained look she wore when her stomach was bothering her. Valentine took her long coat anyway, noting the mud smears and the river smell on her. The waters of the Ohio didn't need a wolf nose to detect.
Where have you been?
Bloomington.
All that way? By yourself?
I hitched a ride with a good old boy who trains fighting dogs. He was on the way to a match in Indianapolis. His truck got me there and back.
You went to a dog fight?
Nah, I skipped it. So did the dogs. But they weren't in fighting shape anyway. They'd just eaten about 260 pounds asshole after I took the wheel.
Why Bloomington?
We received an underground report that the Northwest Ordnance moved into a new headquarters, and I went to check it out.
How'd it go?
Maybe nothing, maybe not. Headquarters was for the Grand Guard Corps Spearhead Brigade from Stryker Division. From what my old Ohio boyfriend told me, that's the best of their best. Unless you count their Marine Raiders on the Great Lakes. Armored stuff that usually is deployed at the Turnpike Gap in Pennsylvania against the East Coast Kurians. They may just be training, from what I could pick up in the bars. It may just be exercises to impress the Illinois Kurians and the Grogs.
Where'd you get the idea to go up there?
Brother Mark. The underground got word to him. Kerr knows how.
Where is he now?
Oh, back at Elizabethtown. The wintering clans are all sending delegates to this big conference to decide what to do next. There's talk they might declare against the Kurians. Others say they're listening to a peace delegation.
Valentine retrieved his mail bag and passed out a few precious gifts he'd picked up in the UFR for his officers and senior NCOs. He couldn't bring much, considering all the personal mail he'd had to carry for Javelin's survivors, but he had a new lipstick for Ediac, aspirin for Patel, a clever chessboard with folding cardboard pieces for one of his corporals who was a chess enthusiast, and matching grog scar pins for Glass and his two gunners, Ford and Chevy. And, of course, the tin of talcum powder for Duvalier and her boot-sore feet.
Where'd you pick up the diaper bag, Val?
This? They said it was a mail pouch.
It is, but even Southern Command doesn't take 9 months to deliver.
Ediac, tell me she's wrong.
Sorry to say, Val. That's a diaper bag. I've seen plenty of them.
Diaper bag?
Southern Command for use of. They gave one to Jules when she got out of the hospital after you inflated her.
It's a messenger bag, Allie.
No, sir, she's right. I saw plenty of them back at Liberty. It's a diaper bag. They came in cute pink and baby blue. You got green if you had twins.
It doesn't say anything on the inside about diapers, just a pattern number.
Well, look it up in a supply catalog. It's a diaper bag.
It's not a diaper bag.
Valentine continued to see Fort Sing's fixtures and equipment dribble away, allocated for return to Southern Command by the hatchet men, who were loading up the trucks as though they were Vikings loading their ships on an English beach for the trip back to the fjords. He decided to make his stand at the artillery park when a little red-headed bird he'd put in charge of keeping track of their activities told him that was on the agenda for the next day. Valentine, dressed in a mixture of military uniform and legworm leathers, complete with cat claws, sidearm, and sword. B, seeing how he dressed, took the precaution of adding a trio of double-barreled sawed-off shotguns to her array, thrust through her belt like a brace of pirate pistols. He headed over to the artillery park. Duvalier, who'd been lounging around headquarters in an old club chair in a warm, quiet corner, threw on her overcoat and followed him out the door. Valentine fought yawns. He'd had a long night. A copper fall day greeted him as he followed the marking stones and path logs serving as steps to the north side of the former park, where the emplaced guns squatted in a quarry-like dugouts area, tearing up the ground around a trio of chicken track-like communicating trenches linking the guns to their magazines. Duvalier fell out of the procession as Valentine descended into the dimple in the natural terrain that served for the artillery positions. Valentine saw Southern Command's artillerymen lounging around the fire-control dugout. Brage clearly wasn't the expert here. He stood apart while one of his hatchet men went over the guns.
Morning, Sergeant Bragg.
That joke never gets old, does it? What kind of getup is that?
New model Kentucky uniform.
Brage ignored him and looked over the guns. The three big howitzers were Moondagger heavy artillery that had been captured at what was now being called the Battle of Evansville Landing. The old Moondagger iconography had been filled in and modified with black marker to make a winking, happy face. The dagger made a great knowing eyebrow. Someone with fairy tale tastes had named the big guns by painting the barrels. Morgana, Egrain, and Guinevere. None of the knights were present. Perhaps Arthur had led them off searching for the Holy Grail. The squinty hatchet man artillery expert shook his head as he inspected the guns. The sergeant's name tag read McClurit.
Can't use these howitzers. Half the lug nuts are missing. Tires are in terrible shape. You'd swear someone had been at them with a knife. We can't have the wheels falling off. Now what are we going to do? Drag them home? Put furs in this beautiful Kentucky grass? The state of these guns? You should be ashamed of yourself, Major. Begging your pardon, sir. Those soldiers of yours playing cards all day?
The grinning gunners looked abashed. Valentine's oversized satchel pulled hard on his shoulder. Naturally enough, it was full of lug nuts and sights. They didn't clink, though. He'd taken care to wrap them in pages torn out from the New Universal Church Bible.
Thank you, Sergeant McLaurin. Thank you very much. I will remember your name.
Big caliber guns are more trouble than they're worth. Need special trucks to haul them in a logistics train a mile deep thanks to those shells. Our factories would do better to crank out more 60 mortars instead of trying to hit these tolerances. A good, reliable 60 is what you need to hit and run in the field. Or an 81 if you're looking to make life miserable for the red legs in some currying post. Besides, it never fails. We just set them up to cover the highway coming down out of Memphis and the currians get word. And the next thing you know, harpies and hoods are coming out of the night like mosquitoes. No, sir. Fixed fortification guns are plain stupid.
Think you put one over on us, Major? Southern Command needs shells just as much as it needs tubes.
Brage was a petty, petty bastard. Good thing he hadn't brought Chieftain or one of the other bears along. Brage would be tied into a decorative bow right about now. Valentine pointed to B, who was digging for fat, winter sluggish worms in the soil beside Egrain.
We keep the magazine under lock and key. All that work with concrete and reinforcing rods? We don't want to waste it with carelessness. She's in charge of the key. Hate to think where she hides it.
I can see the stories about you are true, Major. You'd start a pissing match with a camel.
Duvalier was suddenly in the gun pit. She'd swung in on one of the barrels like a gymnast and landed so lightly nobody noticed her. The master sergeant reached for his pistol.
Keep that weapon in its holster, Sergeant Bragg.
Rage lifted the gun anyway. Valentine's hand shot out, grabbing the man's wrist, getting his body between Brage and the butt of the gun. The master sergeant was stronger than he looked and got a leg behind Valentine. But as Valentine fell, he twisted, getting his hip under Brage's waist, so the two touched earth together, still struggling for the gun. Valentine somehow kept the barrel pointed at dirt. Another hatchet man drew his gun. It fell to the dirt, his nerveless hand dropping beside him, twitching not from muscle action but from blood emptying from the severed wrist. Duvalier's sword made another graceful wheel as she pinned the next sergeant with the point of her knotty walking stick. She brought the sword up, edge crossing the wooden scabbard with Brage trapped between as though his neck were lard ready to be worked into biscuit batter. B had taken a knee, covering the other gunners with her shotgun. The sergeant who'd lost his hand had gone down to his knees and had picked up his appendage. He pressed the severed end to his bleeding stump, pale and growing paler. Valentine put his knee into Brage's kidneys.
Call off your dogs and I'll take care of my cat.
I'll have you both on charges!
You drew first, Sergeant. I was defending a member of my command who posed no threat to anyone.
Just try it. Throw your weight around. Someone else will be carrying that clipboard by the time a Jagger gets here, and you'll be scattered across the countryside in easy-to-carry pieces.
You all heard me! She threatened me!
Let it go, Brage. Goldberg's about to go into shock.
I'm fine. Should I put my hand in ice or what?
Keep pressure on the stump and put it above your head.
Valentine rolled off Brage. He ripped the field dressing he had taped to his weapon belt off. He picked up Brage's dropped pistol and tossed it up and out of the trench, then moved to help the wounded man.
Let him go, Allie. I think you all might want to return to Southern Command now. Colonel Bloom is perfectly capable of organizing a retreat.
Not a retreat. A reallocation of assets.
As it turned out, there was no immediate fallout from the bloodshed in the artillery pit. Valentine had a half dozen witnesses ready to swear Brage threatened Valentine and pulled his gun first. All the rest that followed was necessary to prevent the death or injury of Southern Command personnel. Only Pencil Bolnitz, who'd heard about the scene one way or another and regretted missing it, brought it up after Colonel Bloom's query was closed. Lambert shrugged and told him, service with David Valentine gives no end of future anecdotes, but rest assured he's even tougher on the enemy. Valentine kicked Duvalier's information about the new Northwest Ordnance movements up to headquarters at the next, and what turned out to be final, staff meeting.
Not my problem anymore. We'll be gone in a few days.
Thank you for seeing the work to the fort through, Colonel.
Now the words got out that we're doing a last dash home, everyone wants to get going as soon as possible. You sure you don't want us to bury half that angel food around the joint, just in case you have to blow it up quickly?
We'll be able to handle that. Did I get any volunteers to stay?
Aside from your devoted shit detail, you have a couple scutty types who know they'll do time in the brig as soon as we get back to the Jaggers. Wouldn't trust them any farther than I could smell them.
Noted, sir.
Also, I'm sure you'll be pleased to hear that Gamecock and his bears will be staying on.
I took it up with the boys, sir. Consensus is the Currans are gonna hit you as soon as the rest of the brigade leaves. I figure it's the quickest way to get back to fighting.
How about you, Moitana? Can I count on your wolves?
I'm under direct orders to return.
What can you leave us, Bloom?
That's up to the bone pickers.
Valentine knew that Bloom was referring to the grim-faced hatchet men who'd been inspecting captured vehicles and gear since they arrived, sorting the salvageable wheat from the chaff that would be left to Valentine to make of what he would. Valentine rubbed his fresh-shaven chin.
Since this is the last meeting of this particular staff, I feel like we should have something.
A cake?
I was thinking some of our friends' donuts.
The nut at the gate? They're good donuts, but you have to hear his sermonizing about cur and the elevation of mankind. Eh.
We might want to roust him for a few days so we can't count us walking out.
Valentine brought a corporal with him to get donuts. B loped along behind. Some idlers were watching the Kentuckians build small, heat-conserving homes on the other side of the old Evansville Highway running west of the base.
Mind if we take a sack?
One to a customer, sir. Did you read that literature I gave you?
Fascinating stuff. I have 8 friends. 1 to a customer means I need 8 donuts.
Oh. Well, that makes sense. Did you get to the part about the select gene rescue and propagation?
No.
A well-formed man like you would do well to try out. And don't worry, less than 3% end up castrated.
That must have been in the fine print.
You know, this is an evil land. Best leave it to escape what's common. The punishment.
Punishment?
I take no joy in it. It's heartbreaking. But the fools will persist in their folly.
True enough. How long will you keep handing out donuts?
Until it begins. There will be a sign. A sign from the sky. Beware the evil star. Take it to head and heart, friend and brother. There's a shadow of death over this land. It's flying closer and closer. Oh, your donuts, sir.
I don't suppose you know what direction the danger's coming from.
The worst dangers blossom in one's own bosom. Look to your heart, friend and brother. Watch the skies, my friend and brother. Watch the skies.
Lost in the sleep of the exhausted that night, Valentine dreamed he was back in Weening. The last time Valentine had stopped in Weening, they were using the quickwood tree he'd planted as a maypole, dancing around it every spring. One of the local preachers accused the family who organized the event of being druids. Valentine had placed the seed there years ago. What Valentine wanted were some specimens of quickwood tucked away here and there throughout the Ozarks, just in case, a Johnny Appleseed of resistance to the Kurians. The tree he'd planted in Weening would mature in another year or two, if what Papa Legbaugh had told him on Hispaniola about the tree's life cycle was correct. It would be producing seeds for others to distribute. That was the essence of his dream. The young coffee bean-like quickwood seeds were dropping off the tree and rolling into the brush while he and Gabby Cho stood waist-deep in the nearby stream. The seeds turned into scarecrows, and the scarecrows divided and turned into more scarecrows, all of whom stood in the fields and woods around Weening, all subtly turned toward himself and Cho as they shivered, naked and exposed in the river. At Fort Sing, the men don't reveal much of their thoughts. They carefully pack souvenirs picked up on the march, both the conventional, like some of Karis's old Kentucky coin, or one of the short, curved, ceremonial knives of the Moondaggers, and the odd, buttons, bits of coal slag, commerce stamps with elaborate imagery, Kurian newspapers with their jumbled and misleading accounts of the fighting, bar coasters from the rail towns outside Lexington, even bits of legworm leather with dates of battle stitched into them. One musically inclined soldier has an entire portfolio full of sheet music. He was struck by how many of the same popular tunes were sung in Kentucky with altered lyrics or harmonies to give the ditties a local tone. Repurposed. Southern Command doesn't call it a retreat or abandonment or evacuation. Word has come down from on high. What's left of Javelin is being repurposed. General Martinez calls it a part of his new approach to the war against the Kurians. Admittedly, General Martinez was, is, and continues to be a controversial figure. What the precise proportion of malfeasance, malpractice, and misjudgment went into his tenure as the Southern Command Chief General is the object of some dispute. There are still those who maintain that Martinez's only fault was to see to the welfare of the men under his command first and foremost, only fighting when it was absolutely necessary. But a wise man knows that in life, absolutes vanish like a desert mirage, receding into an unknown distance before it can be quantified. They were making vests and long johns out of the polyester felt Valentine had brought. It was good quality material, warm even when wet, and so light you hardly knew you were wearing it. They had some doubts about durability, so they were adding coverings and liners made out of old uniforms of Evansville tenting. The workshop was churning out bush jackets and fatigue pants in Evansville timber, a mottled camouflage that was a light bleach wash of the dark uniforms the Evansville militia wore. Then they dabbed it with 2 colors of camouflage in a vaguely leopard spot pattern. Of course, there were variations that came from a small group of people working long hours at a fast pace. Sometimes it streaked and ran into tiger stripes. Other times the pattern was so tight and tiny it resembled a sort of hound's tooth. The end result might not have impressed a discerning old world eye, civilian or military, but Valentine was oddly proud. Once again, the uniform was one of Ediac's designs. A big overcoat with drawstrings at waist and sleeves hung to mid-thigh. Beneath it was a padded riding vest of the insulating felt and canvas with plenty of utility pockets, and beneath that, their uniform shirts. Trousers had reinforced knees and seats and a removable felt liner, but it turned out that the buttons meant to secure the liner weren't comfortable, so they were removed and replaced by hook and eye loops. Boots were still a problem. Most of his recruits had come over in civilian duty shoes, fine for the streets of Evansville, but no match for the tough field exercises and wet fall weather that Patel put them through. Hobbled men were no use to anyone. Bad feet made men even more miserable than bad teeth. Southern Command had little in the way of spares after the retreat across Kentucky, so Valentine had to settle for tire rubber retreads cobbled together with rawhide lacing, scraps of webbing, and heavyweight canvas for breathability. The men called them Kentucky galoshes and suffered through the inevitable blisters and abrasions, but the footwear protected ankles and kept off trench foot. Valentine spent long hours recruiting from the soon-to-depart brigade. A few NCOs volunteered to stay because they wanted to finish the fight in Kentucky. Many were the best of javelin, and Bloom crossed a few names off Valentine's list as she doubted she'd be able to make it back to the Mississippi without them. Others accepted the extravagant promises Valentine made. One or two old soldiers elected to stick because they understood the devil in Kentucky, and only God knew where they might be sent when they were repurposed. Might as well spend the remaining time until land allotment or pension riding herd on ex-quislings. Of course, beggars can't be choosers, nor can they expend much mental effort determining the motivations of those willing to help. Valentine was content to take names, get them approved by Bloom and Lambert, and then work out his battalion's order of battle, without having any of his volunteers demoted, so to speak. He did this by creating an on-paper staff company. One benefit of the rumors in Evansville about the departure of much of Southern Command's forces was a near panic about what might happen if the Currians returned, especially with rumors about forces massing in Illinois or Bloomington or outside of Louisville for a dash down the old interstate. So he had volunteers looking to join Fort Sing in any capacity, on the condition that their families would be able to come along if Fort Sing were abandoned. With food running short, Valentine couldn't accept all the volunteers, and even with enough to feed them, he wouldn't be able to arm them. But he was able to fill out his uneven companies by taking, for once, the cream of the overflowing pail. Bloom and Lambert both agreed that Southern Command needed some kind of send-off. The only point of contention was whether the piece that remained still be known as Javelin, or if the designation belonged to the brigade proper. Bloom finally relented, mostly because Lambert had organized the whole party to begin with. If Fort Sing became a monument to the cause's attempt to create a new freehold east of the Mississippi and south of the Mason-Dixon, the tombstone might as well bear the proper name. The headquarters staff kept the news of the celebration quiet to avoid raising expectations, and just in case word traveled to the Currian lengths of the river, either toward Paducah or in the direction of Louisville. No telling what the Currians might choose to create in the way of their own farewell. They detailed a few cooks to roast a pair of pigs and a lamb. Valentine spent the day in the field with his new battalion, returning to see beautiful paper lanterns lining the patio before the great estate house.
Do a lot of entertaining when I'm not around, Colonel?
The basement's full of that sort of crap. A guy who used to live here loved to throw a party.
Got him! Hope! Eddies!
Valentine's recruits stayed off to the side as Southern Command soldiers occupied tables and chairs and benches. The two groups tolerated each other. Valentine's men oddly matched each other in the re-dyed uniforms they'd crossed over to wearing. Southern Command's troops had their patched fatigues, spruced up with their new medals and odds and ends picked up in Kentucky, mostly raccoon tails and legworm claw feet.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Valentine watched as some soldiers warmed themselves around a fire pit with even warmer spiked punch.
Hope we get repurposed to Oklahoma or Texas. Some kind of steer country. I never swallow another mouthful of those caterpillars, it'll be too soon.
You're forgetting the good lean Kentucky horse meat, Corp. Meals fit for a dog.
As soon as I get home to the wife, my Johnson's being repurposed from pee, and that's for sure.
good woman that. Puts up with that wood tick of a dick for more than one night.
What do you say, Williams? You think the bride said, I do, knowing the AAA battery dial ripple is sporting?
Oh, size is for sluts. Give me a man with a quick tongue. I meant interest in conversation, you lunk.
Be glad we're getting out of here. Only tongue you're likely to see otherwise would be out of Reaper.
Home alive in 75.
Worn down dicks in 76.
Shut up! The major's right there!
Well, I missed the 2-for-1 whores of 74 myself. Well, I think I don't have a sense of humor, boys.
Valentine headed for the barbecue spits, purposely altering his course so they wouldn't have to rise from their coffee and rolls and salute. He found his old company headquarters staff passing a bottle of homemade wine with vanquished soldiers tucked out of the way beneath their chairs. Valentine wasn't feeling social. He passed in and out of the conversing groups, shaking hands and wishing well, never lingering to be included in a conversation. He danced once with Bloom, who found his clumsy steps quietly amusing, and once with Lambert, who did her best to hide his offbeat lurches by holding her body so erect and stiff he had to move with her to avoid looking like he was trying to pull down a statue. The Evansville group, Valentine's Legion, some were beginning to call them, though Valentine himself corrected anyone who used the phrase, had an uneasy relationship with the Southern Command regulars. The average soldier had a low opinion of Quislings. They either ran from danger or knuckled under it when the Reapers hissed an order. And the soldiers preferred to keep thinking about them in familiar terms, as targets to shoot at or prisoners to be counted. So the ex-Quislings were relegated to the back of beyond at Fort Sing, a chilly field far from hot water. If the goal of the celebration was to reconcile the two groups, the party was an unmitigated failure. But the two groups each ate well, albeit separately. Brother Mark returned in the darkness. The man had a curious sixth sense about when to show up. If there was plenty of food and drink to be had, he was there. Yet he wasn't a social man. Like Valentine, he seemed to prefer hanging about the edges. Valentine stood before a long table filled with his old shit detail company. Many of them were wearing their new stripes and insignia for the first time.
Be a lot more room for us once the others leave. More hot water for everyone. We'll stick new recruits in your tent shacks.
Be good to have a home at last, sir.
Glass, one of his best men, sat near the head of the table. His heavy weapons grogs were on guard duty while the men celebrated. It was an unusually optimistic statement for Glass, but odd. He'd grown up in the Free Territory.
We don't fit in with the others. Across the Mississippi, they put us in camps. Had a display ID all the time, wear prisoner clothes. Deep down, it ain't life under the towers, but on the surface, it wasn't that much different.
Changing that here and now. After you complete your hitch, you'll be as good as anyone else in the Republic, in the eyes of the law. You can settle wherever you like.
Can we get our land in Kentucky? Better land in some ways in Arkansas. People here aren't so hung up on where we came from.
Not for me to promise. There's Brother Mark, ask him. He can go to the local government and see what they have to say. But they've been plenty helpful to us up till now, haven't they?
Reward's always over the next hill, sir. Be nice if we could get something on paper.
Getting back across the river was much on the soon-to-depart contingent's mind. Valentine had men step up to say goodbye, shake his hand, or say a few hopeful words about wishing him success in the coming winter. They gave him a present or two as well. One soldier gave him a flexible horsehide case for the new Type 3, having seen him practicing with it on the shooting range. Another flicked him one of Karras's coins, the back carefully polished and re-etched with the brigade's designation and the dates of the javelin's operational activity in beautiful copper plate hand. As the night wore on, everyone settled down into groups to smoke, play cards, or show off valuables they were contributing to Bloom's hopper to buy supplies for the trip home. A huddled figure caught Valentine's eye. Alessa Duvalier was listening from just outside of the splashy, colorful light of the paper lanterns, perched on a wall with her legs drawn up and clasped to her chest. Valentine slipped across the party, joining her against the limestone wall. He looked over to her, trying to make eye contact, but she stared down sadly at the almost empty whiskey bottle in her hand.
It'll never work, you know, Val. I thought you were smart about this sort of stuff.
Which it, my friend?
If you think I'm making another drunken pass at you, I'm not. I've sworn off men.
Switching to women? You never could hold your liquor. You want some seltzer? Local stuff's pretty good. It'll settle your stomach.
I haven't finished with you, Valentine. I figured when you recruited all these quislings, it was just to have them make corduroy roads or clear brush or what have you. You really want to turn this bunch into a chunk of Southern Command? Quisling scum like that?
Keep it down. Some of the scum can hear you.
I know their kind. They're whipped, so they'll cringe and lick your boots for a while. First chance they get, they'll cut your throat.
Worry about your own throat. I'm pretty good at taking care of mine.
Women fall for crusaders. It's a chance to be part of something big and good. Oh, that day out in Nebraska when you convinced me to go help the Eagles. I think I fell a little for you that day. A little. Lots of people get twisted by war, turned into something that's all sword and no plowshare. I like how you think of them. But sometimes you get all messed up about who's the victim and who's the victimizer. These bastards were stealing and busting heads at anyone who objected a couple of months ago. Now you have them in Southern Command uniform. You told me once you spent 2 years hunting down the rapists of some girl you knew, or the sister of some girl you knew. How many rapists are you feeding tonight?
None.
Valentine wondered if he should stick close to Duvalier tonight. Some of the men had to have heard her. While they wouldn't loop a noose around her and beat her up, they were perfectly capable of waiting until she passed out and then playing some sort of physical prank that would just make matters worse, especially if Duvalier woke up while someone was inking her face or filling her shoes with manure.
That's part of the deal I offered. Whatever their old crimes, they get a new identity the day they sign up.
Like you're baptizing. Maybe the people who deserve a new life are the ones in Evansville, not these bastards.
Maybe Evansville is happy to have them gone.
Oh, Val, I'm so tired. I'm more tired than I've ever been in my life. I want to sleep forever.
You cross the river again?
Yep. Checking some roads around Evansville in an old pickup. No sign of that armored spearhead. I can't shake the feeling something's gonna happen as soon as Bloom marches her people out of camp.
March out with them. Take a break. You've been going hard for as long as I've known you.
Can't. Every time I leave you, you do something stupid, and I have to claw you out of it.
I do the same for you. Sleep tonight. Where you bunk these days?
Duvalier had a habit of sleeping in strange spots. Chicken coops, dog runs, little scraped out hollows under rusted out cars, quietly going to pieces on the roadside. It was an act of security gained from long habit in the Kurian zone. To not be where a reaper might be poking around, looking for a victim.
That's what death is, right? Just going to sleep forever. Unless a reaper gets you. I wonder if the Kurians can mess with you, you know? Even after death. Like it's hell or whatever.
That's silly.
They almost got me this trip. You think my luck's used up, Val?
You're too smart for him, Smoke.
Valentine escorted her up to his room at headquarters. Though the room had his name on a piece of cardboard taped next to the door, he rarely slept there, preferring to be in the little bungalow by the battalion.
Remember crossing Kansas, Val? You were always up making breakfast. I woke up and there you'd be, frying eggs in a pan and bacon fat. Then you'd pour in some flour and make breading.
It was to prevent you from dining out of garbage bins. The food's healthier when you cook it yourself. I suppose that's why I always fried it to hell. Fear of microbes.
I thought it was delicious.
Father Max used to say my cooking was made for Lent.
Valentine watched Duvalier undress. Not for pulchritudinous reasons. He wanted to make sure there was flesh on her ribs. She was a wanderer afoot, and the long miles left her scarecrow thin. Valentine admired her knife-cut good looks, but wished she looked a little more like the sleek general's plaything she'd been during Consul Solon's occupation than the bony adolescent raising the sheet next to him.
Make me breakfast, Val. Make me some breakfast.
Okay. You stop talking nonsense and get some sleep.
Next to you, like the old days.
Sure.
The queen-size mattress seemed extravagant to Valentine, but then the estate owner considered anything under king fit only for the hired help. He'd not lain naked next to a woman since the erotically mobile, lusty Tika had gathered what was left of the Kentucky Alliance and harried the Moondaggers across Kentucky. Tika had run through his inventory of sexual tricks, many acquired from an older Ohio doctor of highly specialized obstetrics, in a few marathon sessions that left her energized and Valentine exhausted, but both happily relieved of the burdens of the Kentucky retreat during their few hours together. Last he'd heard, she'd returned to the Bulletproof. He hoped she was one of the delegates in Elizabethtown. He felt some faint stirrings below the waist as Duvalier pressed her slight body against him. But the easygoing intimacy he and Duvalier shared wasn't physical, though they took comfort in the body heat and natural comfort of each other's frames when traveling together. Their intimacy might be compared to that of a brother and sister, but outside of black cover gothic erotic romances, few sisters slept next to their brothers with pubic thatch tickling his thigh. No, they were more like a veteran married couple, finding reassurance in each other's bodies, knowing that they'd wake up together or not at all, save that they'd skipped the sex that usually led to such complacency and gone right to physical reassurance.